Podcasting from Nashville Guitar Store in the heart of Music City, USA. Bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. Sharing tales of their history, discussing guitars, their gear, their work, what's on tap for the future, and delivering wisdom we'll all appreciate. Your host is Marcia Ware Wilder, nationally recognized radio personality, singer, actor, and author.
Well, Gordon Kennedy is our guest today, and suffice it to say, one of the most prolific guitarists, singers, songwriters. He is most noted for his work with the Christian band Whiteheart, but then he was part of what I call the world's smallest supergroup, Dogs of Peace. Because I know you got other guys in the band, but for me, it's just you and Jimmy Lee, another potential podcast guest.
We'll get Jimmy Lee for you. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, Gordon, thank you so much. I mean, we've only got a few moments, but hey, let's just work down this resume. Garth Brooks, Ricky Skaggs, Amy Grant, Twyla Paris, Susan Ashton, Stephen Curtis Chapman, PFR. Then there was Change the World, which won, let's see if I get this right, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Best Male Pop Vocal Performance for Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
And I remember the night y'all won. And Wayne raising the flag for the songwriters of Nashville, Tennessee.
That's right.
Now, what's really funny, I'm such a goober. I was watching this, and he's like, I want to give a shout out to the writers from Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm thinking, dude, I just moved here 2 months ago.
Yeah, that was only the second time in 39-year history of the Grammys that the Song of the Year had come from Nashville.
What was the other?
Wind Beneath My Wings.
Stop it.
Those were the only two songs up to that point. And I don't know if any have happened since.
Oh, that's crazy. I'll tell you.
21 years ago now that we were there.
I know. I try not
to. So hopefully another Nashville song has appeared.
Yes. I'm sure between Taylor Swift and LeAnn Rimes, there's something that's happened. But hey, thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of the podcast. This is a real honor.
My pleasure.
Well, here at NashvilleGuitarStore.com, as I adjust my seat here, we like to start, we rewind all the way to the beginning. Mm-hmm. Now, I know for the most part you've lived in Nashville, but you were born in Louisiana?
Shreveport.
Mm-hmm. My husband's from Baton Rouge.
Oh, well, you know, that's where Wayne grew up, speaking of Wayne Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we thought we had in common when we started working together in the early 90s. But, yeah, so, but as a one-year-old, moved to Nashville, brought my parents with me.
I think that was very considerate
of
you.
It was a wise move. No, that's what, you know, brought us to Nashville was the music business.
Yeah.
A man named Shelby Singleton had talked to my dad, and he was another Shreveport guy. Talked my dad, if you want to, you know, go where it's going to happen, you know, you need to come to Nashville. So he talked my dad into moving March of 61.
Mm-hmm.
And dad gave it, now this is according to my dad, what he's told me, all of a good 2 weeks before he decided things weren't showing up with the phone calls for sessions
or
whatever.
Right,
wasn't happening fast enough. And so that, coupled with missing home, he decided, let's go back home. And they'd made the decision to do that when the following day, Shelby Singleton came back from a trip to Chicago where he had been given a Nashville office for Mercury Records, which is based in Chicago.
Okay.
So they said they were going to open an office. Shelby, you're going to run it. And then he offered my dad to be the number two guy at the label. So that was dad's $70 a week job. And it had... We had moved into a house that we were renting for $75 a month.
Okay.
Which, the craziest story happened several years ago. In a nutshell, I had been going to a guy named Jeff Sin, who repairs guitars and builds guitars, to restore an old Fender guitar to its original, finish and everything.
Right, right.
And all the while, no idea, and he didn't know either, that was the first house I moved into when we moved to Tennessee, up off Thompson Lane on Hartford Drive.
That is way
so
cool.
So I had gone back to my first home in Tennessee without knowing it, walking through the halls.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy. That's crazy cool.
But
yeah.
that's what brought my dad to town, the advent of Mercury Records opening an office. He would subsequently become the head of Mercury Records and then run it for 21 years.
Oh, wow.
So... But that's what brought us to Nashville.
Yeah, so you and so your dad, but you've got a brother.
Two brothers, Brian and Shelby.
They are both in the industry as well.
Yeah.
Brian writes,
but also just got finished doing the 3-year-long tour, sort of as Garth Brooks' right-hand guy, not necessarily road manager because they weren't on the road technically.
Yeah.
They would go hole up in a city for, you know, 10, 12 days or uh-huh. whatever and stay there and then book the next city at some point and then go there and live.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't really, you know, doing the road manager mm-hmm. typical stuff, but he was just the day-to-day affairs, you know, on, okay. on the shows for Garth. And writes songs. He's written a bunch of songs for Garth. And,
yeah.
You know, some number ones. And
I love me some Garth.
American Honky Tonk Bar Association, Beaches
yeah,
of Cheyenne.
Yeah.
Cowboy Cadillac. And I think maybe there's like nine or ten songs that he's managed to get cut by Garth. And,
okay.
and then my youngest brother, Shelby, has really kind of been on the business side more
mm-hmm.
All his life. But he did write a couple of songs that mm-hmm. were placed. One was a number one song for Reba McEntire called I'm a Survivor, which became the theme song for her TV show. And then he also had a duet before that that was recorded by Janie Fricke and Ray Charles. So uh-huh. those are his two songs he's had recorded. If you can only, you know, have two, that's the way to go.
That is. Yeah. I'm telling you. I'm with you.
And he runs TuneCore now, the Nashville office for TuneCore now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so okay. that's what... brothers are doing.
That's okay. Well, let's focus on you, and it's just always cool to have that support system around you, like as you're coming up.
I don't know that you have come across this or not necessarily, but my mom sang, and she was, in fact, my wife has not missed an episode of the TV show Nashville, and I walked through the house the other day where she was watching that, and something caught my ear. The background music, which was pretty prevalent in
yeah.
the scene where this cast member was having therapy on mm-hmm. in the scene, and they were playing this song in the background. I told my wife, I said, rewind that. It sounds like my mother's voice. She backed it up, and I said, I don't know this song. I got my phone out, Shazam, no result. I'm like, dang, I know that sounds like mom. And then I went to YouTube and typed in. I said, well, the title of the song must be Don't Bother Me, because that's what she keeps singing.
Right.
So I typed Don't Bother Me, Linda, and it spelled out Brandon, and it was my
Love
mom.
It.
So that's the second TV show, one of her records. And I called my dad. I said, do you remember this title? He said, yeah, she was probably about 15
Love
when
it.
She did that. So she was more R&B.
Okay.
That kind of music, you know, like I always think about, you know, getting in dad's car growing up. It would be Ray Charles and the country and western hits, or
yeah.
it might be Little Richard or Fats Domino,
right?
Some of the stuff he was producing with Jerry Lee Lewis and Roger Miller. But you get in mom's car, it was Junior Walker and All Stars, Otis Redding,
yeah.
Aretha,
yeah.
Sam and Dave.
Yeah.
So that was
Motown, you know, Muscle Shoals.
Yeah,
all
so
that.
That's you know, the diet of music that
so
I
you're
was
pretty.
Growing
yeah, I was gonna
on.
Say that's so you're pretty balanced.
Pretty
so
nice
that's
bookends,
yeah, yeah, that's really really cool. Are you self-taught?
Yes.
How long did that take?
Let's see, how old am I now? It's still taking...
Okay, gotcha.
No,
I understand.
Well, you know, a lot of people would assume that my dad taught me... What my dad did do for me was provide the instruments
mm-hmm.
and the freedom.
Well, what was your first guitar?
Well, me and my brother Brian each received the proverbial silver tone, you know, guitar
yes.
for Christmas when I think Brian, he was too little to put the guitar back in the case. He was 2 and I was 4.
I was going to say, Brian could actually fit in the guitar case.
I had actually just turned 5.
Okay.
And so those guitars, you know, I don't even know what happened to them. And then I'm in about the 3rd grade or something, and we got these guitars that were called Decca, and they were mm-hmm. acoustic guitars, and those had no cases and just went into the closet with the G.I. Joes.
Right,
and
right.
Major Matt Masons, and it just got trampled after a while. But then my dad gave me a Fender Telecaster when I was 15 for
Ooh,
Christmas.
So that's like sitting at the big kids' table.
Well, and that changed my life.
Yeah.
And there was no turning back for me at that point.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that you were a standout athlete in high school. like not just basketball, although because you're quite tall, so basketball makes sense. Of course, I'm 5'1", so everybody's quite tall to me.
Well,
so.
I've been on stage with you. You're the tallest person in the room.
Right. That's only personality.
That counts for a lot.
But, okay, so, I mean, you know, you've got your You dreams of being being a baller, being a football star, being some sort of athlete, but then you've got this Fender Telecaster that your dad's given you, and you're loving
yeah.
just noodling around and finding things to do. When did you realize, okay, athletics isn't going to work, I'm thinking it's going to be music? Or was it always that way?
It was, no. I mean, I went to Brentwood Academy. So, and I played on their first state championship football team.
And what was your position?
I was a wide receiver. I played tailback for a few minutes. I was the place kicker and defensive end on defense, and we played both sides of the ball.
I love it.
So it was – and that and basketball and track.
Yeah.
That, you know, football, basketball, track. 6 straight years that I went to school there, that's mm-hmm. what I did. And,
yeah.
And I was squeezing the guitar stuff in between all that. And always loved music.
Yeah.
I mean, devoured
yeah.
vinyl records, and was blessed to live in a home where boxes of those things would show up quarterly, you know. Mm-hmm. So there would be, I mean, me and my two brothers would go into that box like soldiers getting letters.
You mean
from
you
home,
didn't do the Columbia
know?
Records Club?
Well, no,
where
we were like... on Mercury Records mailing.
Okay,
we got everything that Mercury put out.
Okay.
Came to the house. So Mercury, Smash, Philips. Yeah. There were other, you know, record subsidiary labels that were all part of that umbrella. And, you know, and there would be Bach and Turnover Drive and Rush.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
And the Ohio Players and
yes.
the Barclays and all these. And then country records that would come out. And so they would all go to the three different boys' rooms and go playing at the same time. And it sounded like chaos.
Yes.
You know? But so I was always that. My first record player was a jukebox. It was the Seberg 100 Dad had in the basement of our home in Gillettsville that spun 45 vinyl records. And so that's where I sat and dreamed of doing, I want to do this, and realize what music meant to me even when I was 6 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
Just thought, I want to do this because while I'm sitting in front of the jukebox, right behind me are a bunch of guitar cases.
Yeah.
And there's an upright piano on the
okay.
wall there, and all within touching distance of each other. So I was sort of surrounded by it, literally. And that's all I wanted to do
yeah.
from the time I can remember. And that's all I've ever done.
So in a conversation I had, actually, with Peter Frampton, when we were all working on the, was it Thank You, Mr. Churchill?
It was the Thank You, Mr. Churchill album, and we did the track called The Invisible Man.
Yes, Invisible Man.
With the Motown players.
Yes, that was a fun day. But I remember
yes.
we were kind of taking a break, the singers and you and Peter, and he just started talking about how he used to literally lay on the speaker to figure out how Robert White was doing his guitar parts when he was like just kind of studying Motown. I remember just having that casual conversation, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here talking to Peter Frampton. Somebody I neglected to, you know, mention in the intro, by the way, because you have been on the road with him on and off for a while, have you not?
I've done 2 full band tours with
yeah.
him, and then I've done a couple of years worth of acoustic two-man shows
yeah.
that we've started enjoying doing in the last couple of years, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I caught it on Audience. I saw Peter Frampton. It was like Audience, the Audience Network, and
oh, okay.
it was the two of you, and he was doing an acoustic show. It was really cool.
Yeah.
I almost sent you a little note on Facebook on that.
Right.
But the reason I mention Peter now is just that attention to detail that he had. Did you find yourself, when you were in the basement listening to these records, were you doing something similar to that?
When I was the youngest, you know, going back to listening to music when I was the youngest, you know, of course, when most families might have as a fondest memory, with a family memory sitting in front of the TV watching Partridge Family or
yeah.
somebody, everybody can recall a show or something. Mine was the three boys, mom and dad, and a reel-to-reel tape, spinning that 7.5 tape and listening to whatever he had done in the studio that day with Roger Miller maybe or Jerry Lee Lewis and Statler Brothers and just dreaming
yeah.
that I would get to do that someday. And he'd show me how to turn the jukebox on
yeah.
where I could hit the numbers, the letters and numbers. There's a toggle switch on the back of the jukebox that I could flip to turn the thing on. The lights would come on. I would shock myself on it because if I were touching any other part of the jukebox, it wasn't properly grounded.
Right.
But
and
it
you're
was,
a great connector.
But it was also the shock of Buster Brown's Fannie Mae.
Oh, man.
And my dad's instrumental of Willie and the Hand Jive. And that jukebox was stocked full of a rainbow of different styles and flavors of music.
Do you still have that jukebox?
It's in his basement now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your parents are still with us?
My dad is. Mom's been gone, gosh, 27 years.
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah.
Well,
she
sitting
was
pretty
50.
In heaven. Oh, my goodness.
Beautiful lady, an angel, and just sweet is
yeah.
the word I would use to describe my mom. Sweet, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The length of time. You actually started working on the song in what year?
91. Spring of April of 91 is when Tommy said, is this a song this group could work on and do?
And it was released by Winona in like 94.
Well, the album came out, I think, 95.
Yeah.
Late 95 or something. And then we were watching the singles go ticking off, and they weren't ours.
Yeah.
And then summer of 96, I'm sitting in the studio working on a Nicole Smith record with Tommy.
Wow.
And he says, oh, listen, GK, by the way, we're getting another cut on Change the World. I said, really? Who? He said, Eric Clapton.
Holy cow.
And I remember it, go back to February of 93.
Yeah.
That's the first song I turned in to Doug and said, can you get this to Eric Clapton?
Time for a quick stretch, a run around the block, a splash of cold water on your face, whatever it's going to take to get you back here, because Gordon Kennedy is our guest and we still have so much more territory to cover. Gear, stories from the road, stories from the studio, and of course, another round of Take Your Pick. I am Marcia Wilder and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
At NashvilleGuitarStore.com, paying full price for guitars is a thing of the past. Like dial-up internet. You'll find Epiphone, Fender, Gretsch, Ibanez, Taylor, and lots more. What you won't find is the big box store prices. Get yourself a killer guitar at a fraction of the retail price at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
From the CD Freedom, that is Whiteheart and Invitation. I am Marcia Wilder. Thank you for joining us here at NashvilleGuitarStore.com. The guitar work you just heard is courtesy of our guest for this podcast, Mr. Gordon Kennedy. Welcome to part two of our conversation with him. We're going to pick up where we left off, talking about the universal hit Change the World and the original version that was released before the Clapton version was heard. Winona's version has its own flavor, and yeah. Please come on, bring
a little bit of trivia just for your show.
Yay!
Okay? When the original demo, it didn't go to a guitar solo, but it did do those. My guitar is woefully out of tune. Sorry. So when Clapton does a solo,
yeah.
Down a half, by the way, for all you people trying to tune up. So that became the intro to his song. Mm-hmm. I had played that chord right before a bridge on the original demo, which was Change the World. Right? And so that was Nick's from the Clapton record. It's on Winona's. I'm like, why did they take that out? But by the time his record came out, I knew exactly why they took it out.
Yeah.
I watched Saturday Night Live some weeks or months or something before Clapton was to do the record. Or we found out after he recorded it. But in that period of time, Sting came on Saturday Night Live one night and did his new single.
If I ever lose my faith.
Oh, gotcha. Yes. Yeah, that could have been a bit of a...
That was the bridge. So those were the changes to the bridge on little turnaround thing on Change the World.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
But Clapton sense. Put a guitar solo, which, duh.
You got Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
Give him a solo. You let him see what, give it to the kids. See what he can do with it.
See what he's got.
What has he done?
Yeah.
Hey, but no, I just think that, you know, when I think of you guys, you and Tommy and Wayne, I think about certain things in my own life as a singer, as a musician. And if you had just written one song, mm-hmm. what a contribution that was to pop music history.
And the doors that it opens.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's just cool to see the building blocks of your life and see, you know, how you literally started, you know, at the starting gate. And yeah, it took a few years.
But I think of it as being part of my assignment in this life. And, and I've shared this with the Belmont students recently about, you've probably heard this phrase before, and I didn't say it. Somebody else said it, but it hits me harder these days that God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. And so that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, this was a calling on my life that I answered. And I can tell you the pieces where they were being put in place, going back to my grandfather, who I'm named after.
Yeah.
He was a deputy sheriff, but he asked my dad, a 9-year-old kid, "Son, would you like to get a guitar lesson? You know, you like..."
Oh, that's you.
he said, you know, probably because dad liked Gene Autry, Roy Rogers movies, singing cowboy stuff. So as a 9-year-old kid, he took my dad to get his first guitar lesson, and the following Monday is when my grandfather died.
Okay.
So he put dad on that path. 3 days later, he left the world.
Wow.
So dad's 9 years old. He would have a record deal at 12 on RCA Victor. Chet was playing on his early sessions, you know.
And, okay.
And so dad was kind of a natural. And then, you know, he'd play on the hayride. He'd go out and mom and dad would both do a duet together on the hayride. And then they would go and do some shows opening for Johnny Horton, Battle of New Orleans, Fire Our Guns.
Yeah.
Just kept coming. So there's all that early stuff that was going to affect my life, you know. I mean, so I was surrounded by it by the time I came in the world. But the calling is something that I answered.
Yeah.
Even the fact that I wound up in White Hart.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to.
Yeah.
I didn't ask if I could be in it. I didn't audition for it.
You just kind of found your way there.
Well, Dan said, would you come take my place so I can go do some sessions in L.A.? I need to, you know, can you do these three shows? And then 6 years later is when I left the band. So there's that calling part. And the other thing, I kind of laughed with the Belmont students. I said, and you know, another way I know that it's a calling on my life is because I get called all the time.
Man.
Get called all the time. Yeah. And I said, but you know what I say? I say, yeah, to everything I get asked to do, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, if I can physically get there and do it, I'll answer the bell.
Yeah.
And so, but I've seen how God has equipped me over the years, either putting instruments into my hands or having, you know, Kathy Nelson show up. I mean, that's part of
it's
this.
Favor.
It's part of it because I've seen that one song title open doors. I mean, that's the reason why St. Jude's or Meals for Health, Cancer Rally for the Cure, all these different charities that I do over the years, they can use me because of that song title and get more done than if I just were somebody that can sit in a NAMM show booth and play great, you know.
Right.
That song has made that kind of a big difference for me. So it's just part of how I've been equipped to answer the call. That is, the song itself is just one of the things here that I take out and can put in the, the thing now. So to answer the call.
Yeah. Well, switching gears, my darling, let's talk gear, shall we? Let's get to the nuts and bolts of what you do.
Are there nuts and bolts in these things?
There really are. Hey, okay. So first of all, okay. So for our social media people, they can see the guitar, but for our podcast kids, what did you bring for us Gordon, what did you bring for show and tell today?
Well, Miss Marcia, I brought, this is my brother Brian's J45. It's a 1965 J45 that he bought from Gary Chapman.
Cool. I love Gary.
I've had it refretted for Brian.
Okay.
Wink, nod. I mean, it needed it, and we've had to do a little, make sure the bridge was staying on the top of the body, but that is... a great studio guitar.
Yeah.
Won't ever put any kind of electronics and stuff on there, but just when I know to play in the room.
Right.
Or if there's a mic or something.
So what is your go-to guitar when it comes to, like, you... Actually, let me back up because I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's imagine if we're in a boat and the boat is sinking and you can only save one guitar.
Oh.
Which one of your guitars would you
save? Well, it would be a solid body guitar because you can use that as an oar.
I knew you were going to say
that. The others, the semi-hollow bodies will fill up with water. No, I mean, I would say my father's 1961 ES-335, just because of the history of what the records that he played with that guitar. Pretty Woman.
Okay.
Stand By Your Man. Good Luck Charm.
Wow.
Blonde on Blonde.
Really?
Yeah, Dylan, Blonde on Blonde.
Ringo's
second solo album, Bukuza Blues. On and on and on. On and on and on.
Oh, my word.
I've been going back and listening to things I know I heard when I was a kid, but listening to them again. Charlie Rich.
Yeah.
Write this title down. Charlie Rich, Life's Little Ups and Downs. Listen to that. And that's him
I am writing that
out. That's my dad. And it's Charlie. He wrote the song, playing the piano and singing. It'll give you chills, that song, the performance.
I love
it. But I mean, there's so many records. So that guitar was very precious, mm-hmm. and I've been using it since 1988.
Do you write with it too?
You know, I write usually with acoustic guitars.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but I mean, I've used that on a slew, and Peter's played it on the Mosaic album.
Wow.
He said, I was hoping you'd bring this one when I showed up with that for him to use. But I mean, I use it on Jewel Records and uh-huh. Shadazy and Faith Hill and, oh gosh, Little Big Town, first three albums I've yeah. used that guitar, and Susan Ashton. I mean, all, and some Whiteheart record.
Yeah.
So I've been using it since 88. But that would be the one that I would run from the boarding house fire, you know.
Yeah, carrying. Yeah, yeah.
There's some other wonderful instruments there. There's a John Sebastian 1959 Les Paul that he used on all the Love and Spoonful records. Mm-hmm. That's seriously great guitar.
Yeah.
It's sort of a one that you measure everything else against now after playing it. Mm-hmm. Other guitar players who've played it will tell you the same thing. And then, you know, I mean, I've got some wonderful, I mean, I say, and I thank God for them, wonderful instruments.
Yeah.
And I thank God for them every day that they've found their way into my hands, because there are better players out there, and
yeah.
and you know, I'd assume players have them than collectors, but
yeah,
but they're, you know, to me, those guitars hanging on the wall, this mm-hmm. guitar right here, you yeah. know, the, you know, if you don't praise God, the rocks and the hills,
yeah,
and maybe the trees,
they'll take care of it.
They'll stand in testament to the glory of God. But I mean, when you take one of those trees down and make this with it,
yeah,
you better be about that business with that thing too. So
that's good.
That's the way I feel about all of these instruments.
Well, let me ask you something. I heard listening to one of my favorite documentaries, "Standing in the Shadows of Motown," mm. and James Jamerson Jr. was talking about his dad's bass. We lost him a couple of years ago too, bless his heart. But he was obviously talking about his father's bass, and it's old, and there's just so much like dirt, and that's now. Is there something to that, or is that just, I mean, like just the age of an instrument? I mean, you're talking about your dad's guitar. Is there something to that that you just don't want to mess with, in terms of like?
Well, I've heard Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers fame get like fuss at his tech for polishing a guitar up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Don't ever do that again.
Yeah,
The older guitars, they have a jump start on tone.
Yeah.
In some respects, because of the aging of the wood.
Yeah.
Even the 59 Les Paul that I have as a new guitar, there was something special about it, because the wood they used to build that guitar had been cut down in the 1800s.
Wow.
So here we're building the guitar in 1959.
Oh.
But see, now you can get a Les Paul, and the wood might have been cut down Thursday.
Yeah. I understand. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's definitely something to old wood.
Yeah.
Even the magnets that
yeah.
make up the pickups, you know,
yeah.
and the, you know, they might get weaker over time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen over the last few decades or so where pickup manufacturers have, you know, produce these pickups that are overwound and hotter and mm-hmm. make the amps distort faster, because it's the rush to distort
yes.
world for the decades now.
Yes, yes.
But the guitars that have the sweetest tone
yeah.
are the pickups that are wound a little weaker.
Yeah.
And the parameters of what constitutes a success and the goal in my mind, gosh, somebody else, and again, I don't know who I'm quoting here, but somebody likened you know, pick out a bullseye on a target and mm-hmm. taking an arrow and shooting, mm-hmm. trying to hit that bullseye.
Yeah.
And then you miss it.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, whoops, I failed.
Yeah.
But somebody said, no, what you do is you take the best arrow that you can get, the best mm-hmm. bow. I mean, whatever these things are that we
yes.
call that help us with our gifts and whatever that is, and take your best shot. And where that lands, that arrow,
yeah.
go there and paint the bullseye around that,
okay.
where it landed. So I've seen this happen in my life so many times, to the point of where, like I said, I would tell my young self, don't ever, ever think you failed, as long as you're doing something.
Yeah.
There's a man who's a wonderful friend of mine, World War II veteran. He was a coach at BA, Jimmy Gentry.
Mm-hmm.
Gentry's Farm in Franklin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
This is Mr. Gentry.
Okay.
He and I have the same birthday. But he's 92.
Okay.
And he said one day, he said, I don't know where I got this, but then again, I think I do. He said, but he said, it's this. He said, know where you belong, work hard, and when something needs to be done, God will know where to find you. And what that means to me is know where you belong, know what you're good at, mm-hmm. know what your gifts are.
Yeah.
Work hard. Don't just sit there and wait for somebody to come knocking on the door and give you the
it doesn't happen
sweepstakes
that way.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when something needs to be done, God will know where to find you. In other words, you won't have to be moved very far to answer the bell for that.
Yeah.
So when somebody says, can you go to Seattle at the end of this month to play for St. Jude's? I'm ready to go right now.
Right.
I'm ready to go right now.
That's good. That's good.
But if somebody said, can you go perform a surgery at St. Jude's? I would go, ooh.
This is not my expertise.
No, and that path is going to be a long and winding,
gotcha.
Situation. So, but I mean, it's know where you belong.
Yeah.
And so I would tell my young self that.
Yeah, know where you belong. Mm-hmm.
Work hard, and when something needs doing,
God knows where to find you.
He knows where to find you. He knows right where you are. You're where you're supposed to be.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. You have no idea how much I actually needed to hear that today, so praise God. All right, well, this is a question that just kind of popped into my head last week when I was speaking with another artist, Dave Cleveland, and I think I'm going to just start asking some version of this question to every person that comes into this studio. What is the one thing about guitar? Because Bob Babbitt, the late great Bob Babbitt, told me, kid, you got to find something that satisfies your soul.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that you are a man of faith, and I know that Christ satisfies your soul. Got that. That's a given. But your that artistic, because every good and perfect gift comes the Father of Heavenly Light. So I would love to know what it is about guitar that satisfies your artistic soul, that thing that he gets you up in the morning, he gives you something to play. What's going on in your heart when you know the cylinders are clicking and just something's coming out of you? It may be the next single, or maybe just something that you play for yourself.
There's I don't know, a lot of different directions I could go there, but I think that it centers on the fact that I think we're all creative in some way. Mm-hmm. I mean, just by the sheer fact that we are created in His image, he says. Therefore, it's innate in us to want to create. I mean, the ultimate creator, if we're created in His image, well, it stands to reason.
Okay, yeah.
And the fact that He could take confusion, chaos, swirling nothingness and make all of this out of that, then why would we ever feel limited with a blank piece of paper, a blank screen, a guitar that's just lying there right now, not doing anything, you know, but the desire to create, to be creative and express. I mean, this is in us.
Yeah.
It's in us, you know, and I tell people, I say for some of you, it's to create, you know, that painting on the wall there or a meal for somebody to enjoy. You know, I had a great meal at my dad's house last night. Dolores made this. I mean, and we went to a restaurant today. I said, yours was better. You know, but I mean, to create something that people will enjoy. A defense in a court of law or an offense for a football team, whatever. These are creative minds that are always, you know, what can we do that's different?
Yeah.
You know, how can we do something new?
Yeah.
Something exciting or something, like you said, that satisfies the soul, you know? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's amazing to have a soul that wants to be satisfied and then a soul capable of taking care of that same situation.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. I just think that the desire to create, you know, that the thing about the guitar is, you know, and again, a while ago I said that thing about if we don't praise God, you know, well, there's something about, you know, putting your fingers to this piece of wood and pressing your fingers there and having music, which if you go and look at like what Pythagoras said about music and how it relates to the creation of the universe, the harmonic structure is actually in tune with the creation of the universe. Yeah. The sun emits a tone.
Yes.
So there's sound everywhere.
Yeah.
And the little bits of nuggets of gold I hear about or read about that people have gone and come back to, you know, died and been brought back or whatever, and what they talk about hearing.
Yeah.
You know, that everything there makes music.
Yeah.
Everything. And the Don Piper book, 90 Minutes in Heaven, he talked about, because he was gone for 90 minutes. And he said, just when you think that the most exciting thing about being in heaven is being reunited with family and friends, he said, then I heard the music. And he said, there is nothing in our vernacular that can describe what I heard. He said, I wake up, some mornings I wake up and think I hear faint versions of it, and then it goes away real quick. He said, but I can't even describe it, you know. He said, if you had, what do you say, five people in the room playing different songs at the same time, it would be nuts, you know. He said, but I could hear and distinguish a thousand different songs playing at the same time. All working together. So there's something different there. But I think that every once in a while, you know, I will pick up a guitar or I'll hear it in a voice. I'll hear it in a voice too. You've ever been moved to tears?
Oh, yeah.
By the sound of a voice?
Yeah.
I mean, when Aretha got up and did
Nessun Dorma, shut up.
Okay.
Seriously.
Okay.
Seriously.
But every once in a while, I hear something like that.
Yeah.
Or I'll hear even Jeff Beck, of all people.
Yeah.
With a Stratocaster.
Yeah.
Do something. And then I think at that moment, we are catching just a little glimpse of what it's like later.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's... I even had somebody tell me one time, because I was even just reading a poem or reciting a poem that a friend of mine that I went to high school with, who passed away from muscular dystrophy, had they found in his room after he passed away. It was a poem about him understanding his place in life, that position that he was in, and wasn't good, you know. But his very mature God's perspective on that, and it'll make you cry to read it. And I said, I was trying to just recite some of it in front of an audience at a church one night, and completely broke down.
Yeah.
And it never happened to me before. And I told a pastor friend of mine afterwards, I said, I don't know what happened to me. He goes, I know what happened. I said, well, tell me, enlighten me. You know, he said, well, in that moment, God was allowing you to see his heart for Chris.
That's cool.
And so I just think that there are certain things that we can experience on this side that are just a little glimpse, small snapshot of what is to follow.
Yeah.
That he lets us... kind of like just lets us have a little peek.
That's good.
You know, and so this is definitely something that, I don't know, I just feel like that's kind of hooking into that that line a little bit.
I love it. So what's next for you? I know you got a lot going on, but what's on the horizon?
Well, you know, Skaggs and I are talking about doing a sequel to Mosaic.
Okay.
Peter and I just started writing some new songs, so we'll be doing another album at some point. He's out touring right now.
Yeah.
Gibson guitars, we are doing a Jerry Kennedy Pretty Woman 335. They're going to build 50 of them with the custom-made levers and the scratches, copy them, you know. So they do 50 of those guitars. I can't wait for that. That should be any minute now, hopefully. I call it an extravaganza per day. There's something every day.
Yeah.
I am going to Seattle for St. Jude soon. I'm going to go down to the kitchen in Green Hills and play for the women who come and volunteer to make food for cancer patients that are delivered to them, called Meals for Health, and Kathy Heimerdinger, the Heimerdinger Foundation.
Yes.
Always doing stuff like that, whatever they let me do.
Yeah.
And
where can someone who is not familiar with your work, I don't know who that might be, but where could somebody find out more about you? Do you have a website?
You know, I don't really. There's a Gordon Kennedy Nashville on Facebook or something, but I don't.
Yeah.
I don't really keep up and do that stuff very much. Every once in a while, somebody will say, you know, you should put that show date on there. And so I'll go, okay. Because I play in a Beatle band called Mystery Trip. And we just started a Tom Petty cover band with some incredible players.
Very cool.
Oh, my gosh. And also have just started a project with Brady Seals, who was in Little Texas.
Yes.
But he's related to...
Seals and Crofts? Yeah.
Oh, England Dan also.
And
Troy Seals, songwriter.
Okay.
So Brady's part of that family. And then Lua Crofts, Dash's daughter.
Awesome.
So we're going to do a little duet project on them.
Okay.
And cover some of their... family history in music and some new songs, but that's something that's come up here recently. Gosh, I don't know. Just
there's just a lot. Yeah. Just Google Gordon Kennedy, seriously, and then you'll get like pretty much his whole life.
Well, you know, look, you know, come see me at the Bluebird and things like that. I really do. I was telling my wife this morning. I said, you know, I'm looking at the last decade of my life and thinking, I'm kind of over. I'm like prepared for hunting bear as far as electric guitars. But I said, you know, those bears have kind of gone. You know, I do mostly acoustic stuff these days because I do more performing songwriter things.
Yes.
So, because we were just talking about the acoustic guitar, and our son plays mandolin and wants to build them. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, Dylan, he's a great mandolin player.
You should bring him by here sometime and have him talk to Joel. I mean, because Joel, I'm telling you, I would,
Does he build?
He refurbs.
Okay, well then Dylan would like to come meet him.
Yeah, I would imagine he would.
That needs to happen.
Yeah, Joel is the man behind the curtain.
Okay. Well, tell him that Dylan plays. He got the mandolin because he could play Bach on it. He's playing Bach on mandolin.
Okay.
Cello suite on mandolin.
Nice.
So, but yeah, he would love to come meet him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just give me a shout. You got my contact info. I'll set it up. I know your son would love it. And Joel's cool. Like I said, he's the man behind the curtain, making sure everything sounds good when it gets shipped out of here. So,
right.
Well, listen, let's have a little fun, shall we? I have this thing I call my little audio Rorschach test. It's just a little, just no thought required. It's a game we call Take Your Pick. I'm going to give you two things. You pick either this or that.
Say either this or that, nothing else. Just say this or that.
Well, if you're like anybody else that's walked in here, you're not going to be able to say just this or that. So let's just roll with it and see what happens.
Okay,
let's have some fun.
Pass? No. All right.
Yeah.
Let's see.
There are certain answers that will, you know, might be deemed as acceptable. You just don't know.
I mean, am I explaining these answers? Or just giving you the answers.
Just giving me the answers. All right. So the first one's easy. Beatles or Stones?
Beatles.
Guitar strings, 10s or 11s?
10s.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Okay, there you go.
Well, if I can't say anything, I would drink coffee if it was a liquid donut, like a mochas and things.
Yeah.
Like, I do like those.
Yeah, you like
coffee.
Yeah, you're more like I like the smell of coffee, but the actual consumption.
Tell the difference between a dead skunk and a coffee brewing.
You know what? I'm kind of with you on that. Yet I will still.
Boy, did I get off the.
Yeah, that's all right. No, I actually understood. What's really scary is I actually understood that because I'm with you.
Okay.
All right. So amps, Fenders, or Boss? Or Marshall? Sorry?
Fender.
Okay.
For these days. Just
for these
days.
Toothpaste, middle of the tube or from the bottom?
Bottom.
My man, help me out. Help a sister out.
Of course.
I'm serious. We got toothpaste from Costco. My husband has not only proceeded to open like three different tubes, they're all
usually
from the middle.
Around.
No.
Okay. Well, that's interesting to know. All right.
Bless his little heart. And he knows it. I throw him under the bus every time I ask somebody this question.
All right.
Dream guitar teacher, Hendrix or Stevie Ray?
Hendrix.
Live or studio?
Is this a preference?
Yeah.
Okay, preference. Do I prefer live or studio?
Yes is also an acceptable answer.
But, my gosh. Studio.
Okay. I was going to say, you almost hurt yourself
on
that
one. No, we need to have a whole interview about just that question.
Just that question. Hey, 4 a.m., get up or go to bed?
I would rather go to bed at 4 a.m.
Okay, and finally, guitar riff, Smoke on the Water or Purple Haze?
Purple Haze.
I'm in a really purple frame of mind today. My husband pointed that out. He's like, really? You're all about some purple today. Purple Haze, Smoke on the Water, but Deep Purple, it's all,
you got a theme.
Well, I'm nothing if not clever. Well, we want to thank you so much for taking time to be a part of this. I'm just so thankful because yours is a history that our listeners really need to hear. And I'm just so thrilled you took time to come and hang out with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Marcia. And I also want to thank NashvilleGuitarStore.com for having me. Thank you.
Yay!
All right.
Dedicated to bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. To hear more, subscribe to the Nashville Guitar Store podcast in iTunes. Go to NashvilleGuitarStore.com or find us on Facebook and Instagram.